I'm going to read some poems. This is called Cucumbers. We sit in near silence, your mother in a creaky rocker and I in a hard-back cushioned chair. Sunlight falling from a window, holding a frenzy of dust flakes. It's Sunday, 10 years since that Sunday in May. We smile at each other, fiddle our fingers, avoid each other's gaze. Your high school photo, framed in gold, watches from the mantel, the same picture from the newspaper. Your mother asks about my life in the city. How long will I be in town? She speaks of people whose names I can no longer put faces to, and confesses how she still searches the want ads for jobs you would have been good at. I still can't bring myself to buy cucumbers. He loved them. She never mentions the car accident or how she had blamed me for your drinking again. And I never told her about that night after you died, how you visited me and we sat together until morning. This is called Where You Are. How long has it been? You can't recall. The distance incalculable, like genealogy in the Bible, or the litany of regrets you listened to your father recite as he drove down familiar streets, lined with all that remained of his dreams. That blissful summer day, you stood in your grandparents' backyard eating tiny bulbs of garlic, still burns in your memory. How the hazy sun blanketed the narrow wing of your shoulder and your grandmother. How immaculate she looked in her heels and Sunday wig, framed in the kitchen window. And your grandfather in the garden turning tomatoes in his calloused hands. School days, the scent of his pipe followed you through third period history, where you learned all those watered-down versions about democracy and how the West was won. Now you look back on it all, the past that never belonged to you, how you raged so impatient in front of the bathroom mirror, just dying to shave, to feel the blade against your skin, as if you had any idea what it took to be a man. But who would have believed you'd end up like this, late 30s, hair receding, still working that stupid job you promised yourself you'd quit long ago, and all those dreams dead and buried. And now you wake each morning only to find this is where you are. Thanks. This is a happy poem about drinking in New York. It's called Black and Tanned. Black and tanned, we hurly-burlied through the ship swaying of streets and doorways in maze of cityscapes, amid the sweat of clinking glass laughs, propelled by a taste for the tragic. In a bitter swill of blurred antidotes and redundancies, we have talked of heroes, villains, and the sacredness of socks. This is another poem about New York. Howard Johnson's, a restaurant in Times Square. Howard Johnson's Times Square. How easy it would be to disappear here, become a fixture, like the chipped coffee cups, knives and forks, formica countertops, orange booths, that wonderful smell of grease burning. Imagine having your pick of early bird specials, after theater snacks, day in and day out. To be awash in the neon glow on rainy nights, when you find excuse me, when you find the face of James Dean in your grilled cheese, sitting back You gawk at the Polish waitress, dancing across the room, pouring drinks, balancing trays of roast beef and gravy, mashed potatoes, Ipswich clams, and apple pie. In between acting classes at the new school and parties in Greenpoint. Doesn't her garboesque curls and milk-white skin hold all your hopes and dreams and schoolboy fantasies? Look at the way she tugs on her ear and licks her lips when you're taking too long, deciding between soup or salad. You know you could love her forever if you could just summon the courage to ask her phone number. Instead, you settle for a sixth cup of coffee and extra ketchup for your fries. Thank you. There's a few more. This is called Barcelona. They were among the first settlers here, not long after the war for independence was won. My father's people, square-jawed, Scotch-Irish Presbyterian stock, fishermen, farmers, and factory workers all, pale as salt and stern as the god that sent down fire on Sodom and Gomorrah. These are the people I never knew, but know, through photos yellowed by so many seasons, my grandmother left, when God in his mercy blessed her one October day with a stroke, and she was free of widowhood, colon cancer, and cataracts. It was here in Barcelona, New York, on the southern shores of Lake Erie, that once swelled with whitefish, blue pike, and herring, where the first gas-powered lighthouse was built in 1829, where my father was born. Here, where Dr. Thomas Branwell Welch invented a way to preserve unfermented grapes, where Grace Bedell, age 11, suggested to Abe Lincoln that he would look a lot better if he grew whiskers. Here, where the winters last until midsummer, and here, where my life will surely end, just as it began, a speck of dust lost in a universe that rarely acknowledges the dreams of an ordinary man. Thank you. This is called Pocket Knife. Sitting on the back porch steps by the Raspberries Rebellion, I finger your tobacco-stained Kingston pocket knife as if it were a magic lamp that might connect me to you once more. The knife you chipped Captain Black from your pipe, hands, fingers swollen from gout and arthritis, hands that shoveled coal into steel plant furnaces for 40 years, taught me to peel an apple, hold a bat. The same knife you gave me for my 10th birthday, I swore I lost playing kickball. The same knife Uncle Joe found in a kitchen drawer, looking for money in old baseball cards. Above where Grandma kept aprons, buried in a mass grave of empty Scotch tape dispensers, matchbooks, and expired coupons. Found the day after your funeral, like that photograph in an old cigar box on the cellar stairs. You in Wallace, Idaho, summer 1933, standing so proud on that rocky bluff, hands deep in denim pockets, dimpled smile, thick dago hair, looking like I look now, wishing I had the courage to hug you more. I got one more. One more. This is called Tokyo and the Rio Grande. I was not yet 26 that January. I drove cross-country with two women, one of whom I was foolishly in love with, for she was in love with a herbologist from L.A., and the other one who chewed bubble gum and talked about nothing but Brad Pitt and Scientology. We picked up at a diner in Mobile. And though I'd been to Ireland and Bermuda, it was my first time west of Ohio. On Interstate 40, somewhere between Blue Water and Thoreau, my head buried in the pages of a road atlas, my fingers following our course, I marked off cities and towns we passed and remembered how, as a child, I'd sit for hours gazing at maps, transfixed by longitudes and latitudes, infatuated by topographies, maps of rainfall distribution, ocean currents, vegetation and mineral maps, maps that showed the relative motion of tectonic plates, changes in sovereignty, military advances and retreats. How I was smitten with historical maps, grew dizzy over political and population maps, maps that measured the depths of oceans, lengths of rivers, world maps, regional maps, and city maps. All these maps filled me with a longing for someplace other, like the stories my Uncle Joe told about his days in Buffalo, Boston, and New York, wandering streets, working in a garment factory, selling his blood for wine, and being rejected by the Nation of Islam because he was white. Each time I opened an atlas, those wondrous melodies and rhythms played in my ears, places 20 years after that first cross-country trip I still have yet to see. Zanzibar, Marrakesh, Calabria, and Wolverhampton. Argentina, Pakistan, Tokyo, and the Rio Grande. Thank you.